We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Yeah! Summers! Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN.
Well, it is a good evening to you and AB. It's 7:06, 5 seconds to go along with it on a Thursday evening on your fan, New York City. Steve Summers here, you there, Peter Hoffman, Carrie Ann Galante. They are on the other side, 1-877-337-6666. From right now, another 3 hour Thursday schmooze, right up until Jody Mack. Jody McDonald at 10 on your fan New York City, but right now it's 7:06 on your fan in New York City, Frank Isola. And I guess in one sentence, Frank, I can say Frank Isola is everywhere, and that covers everything maybe except the movies. But of course, we remember when you started with the Daily News, still there and now everywhere. Frank, how are you?
Good. The important thing is that you're back, because the place is not the same without you. It's good to hear you again on the radio. I'm happy that you're back. You are a FAN institution. Good that you're back.
And there's a lot of people who think I belong in one. Listen, I'm not necessarily joking. Before we get into LeBron and the mouthpiece and the shimmy and the Warriors and with Houston with the beard and, of course, LeBron looked old and tired last night with the Celtics, let me ask, why doesn't the NBA have the issue that the NFL has with the protesting and the national anthem?
That's a great question. And, you know, if you think about it, can you imagine if the NBA instituted this policy today after a player, you know, converted Muslim, Mahmoud Abdul-Rauf, wasn't standing for the anthem? And they said, all right, so from now on, here's the rule. If you don't stand for the anthem, you're going to get fined. So you either have to be in the locker room, but we want you out on the court lined up for the anthem. I think maybe it's the NBA's history regarding social issues and things of that nature. That might have something to do with it. Unfortunately for the NBA, maybe a little bit of it has to do with the popularity of the sport, because the NFL is still the number one sport in this country. And I think people identify football with the military and patriotism and the national anthem, even though, I mean, I don't know about you, but except for really the Super Bowl and maybe the conference championship games, unless you're at the game, you don't really get a sense of the anthem. You know, like if you go to an NBA game, you're going to hear it 82 times. Mm-hmm. It seems a little bit different at football games. It really became an issue a couple of years ago, obviously, with Colin Kaepernick. And guess what? It's going to be an issue again at the start of this season coming up.
And, of course, I mean, so many people are adamant, I mean, just dead set that the protesting has less to do with social injustice and police brutality and freedom of speech, even if it is so silent. And
I mean,
more with disrespecting the flag and what it stands for, and all those who paid the ultimate price from the armed forces. I don't think it has anything to do with disrespecting the flag, but more respecting what the flag stands for.
Oh, I think you're right about that, but I do think that a lot of people do view it as that. And I also think, too, I think in a lot of ways, Colin Kaepernick kind of became a polarizing figure when he wore the socks that depicted police as pigs, and then he was wearing the Castro shirt. So I think, I'll bet you if he looks back at it now, I'll bet you part of him probably regrets making, you know, some of those fashion statements would probably hurt his cause a little bit.
Oh, there's no question about it. Very stupid, idiotic, at least two words you can use to say all of that. Let me touch on Mr. Porzingis with the new head coach of the New York Knickerbockers. It seems the two of them are bonding and very much liking each other right now.
Yeah, and I think we know that that's important, because David Fizdale did have an issue with Marc Gasol, and the sense that a lot of us, he wasn't you know, maybe wasn't as respectful towards international players as he should be. And I think he also realizes how important Porzingis is to the team. And I think it's good that Porzingis is listening to the coach. Because if you remember last year, you know, Kristaps Porzingis did not attend his exit meeting, flew right to Latvia, which I didn't think was the right thing to do. I mean, I think if your bosses call you in for a meeting, I think you owe it to them to do it. But I think it did illustrate that there were some issues. And I still think there are some issues of trust between, you know, the Kristaps Porzingis camp and the New York Knicks. And I think it was smart for David Fizdale to reach out. He did meet with Kristaps' brother, I think it was last Friday in New York. And he does have plans to go over to Latvia at some point to meet with him, which I think is important. You know, if you talk to a lot of NBA coaches, it's hard to do it in the other sports because there's more players. But a lot of times when coaches get jobs and they have the entire offseason, they'll go visit each player, and they kind of like doing it in that player's, you know, home state, because I think it makes a stronger connection with the player when the player gets to introduce him to, you know, people that are close in his life, family members and such. And I think there's a lot of NBA coaches that are smart when it comes to something like that. And if it means having to get on a plane and travel, you know, almost halfway across the world to Latvia, you know, it's not going to be snowing in July or on August, so you might as well go over there.
And see something new and bond with the best player on the Knickerbockers. And he's also said, Fizdale has, he wants to meet the family, get to know them. Here's the question with what Fizdale did last night. He took a number of young Knickerbockers to the game in Boston. Do you think, A, do you think that would inspire them to reach that kind of level? I mean, we're talking about getting into the conference finals and winning it and getting to the NBA finals, or do you think it might intimidate some of the young players that Fizdale took last night, wondering if they could ever reach the heights of excellence that we have seen from what they were looking at last night with Boston and, of course, Cleveland?
Yeah, maybe Frank Ntilikina turned to David Fizdale and his French, asked him, we really have to compete against this team for the next 5 to 10 years. That's going to be a lot of trouble. You know, there have been guys that have done that over the years. I remember when Isaiah Thomas was first in Toronto, he would bring Damon Stoudemire to NBA final games. He brought Tracy McGrady. You know, I don't think it could hurt. I don't know, you know, how much it helps. I mean, Boston fans have been to a million playoff games, so maybe that would make them a little bit better in pressure situations. So you know what? More than anything, it's a gesture on behalf of David Fizdale that he cares, that he wants to be involved, and he's making a connection. And I think today with players, maybe more so than ever, you know, with millennials and things like that, I think there's probably you need to make that stronger connection more than ever. So I think it's smart for David Fizdale to do it. Do I think it's just a simple gesture? Absolutely, but I think it's a smart one.
Yeah. Well, he wants to get to know his players. That is one way of doing so. That's for sure. Going to Latvia with the Porzingis and meeting with the family, that's a good thing. And yes, getting together and going to Boston last night to watch two very, very good basketball teams get together. You know, listen, the idea is a solid one, whether it works or not, to inspire some of these young guys. And by the way, Ntilikina, Ntilikina and Moutier, I think they have a little bit of work to do before they really become winners in the NBA, Frank Isola.
Yeah, and I think that'll be the difference. I think David Fizdale is going to show up for the first day of training camp, and he's going to think, you know what, I liked both of these guys a lot more when we were just hanging out in Boston watching a playoff game. And I thought Frank Ntilikina, I thought the criticism was a little unfair for him. You know, not every rookie is going to come into the league great. And I get it. Jason Tatum came into the league great, and certainly Donovan Mitchell has done the same. But, you know, sometimes it does take guys a little while. And it's pretty interesting. I think if you look at the development of a guy like Victor Oladipo, who was a big-time athlete coming out of Indiana, drafted by Orlando, they decided to trade him to Oklahoma City for Serge Ibaka. Oklahoma City ends up trading him for Paul George. So here it is in year four, and Victor Oladipo, who was a high draft pick, became an all-NBA player this year. You know, he had a breakout season. He led Indiana to the playoffs, had a great first round against LeBron James and the Cavaliers. They almost won. I think sometimes it takes certain players a little bit longer than others. Look at Chauncey Billups' career. You know, Chauncey Billups, by his fourth year, I think was on three teams already, and it took him a while. So I think sometimes, especially with point guards, I think NBA teams have a tendency to be a little impatient, and they tend to get rid of guys maybe a little bit too soon. And I think Frank Ntilikina, he has been in a professional system most of his life, playing in Europe. He wants to be good. He works hard. He's a good person. So we'll see how it works. Eventually, it's going to be based on talent, but I will say this about him. I think he wants to be good, so he'll put that work in.
And what about, let me ask you this about with Ntilikina and, of course, Moutier. They're going to be playing and getting more minutes than Trey Burke?
Yeah, Trey Burke definitely, and Trey Burke did well, so I'm not going to
knock
him. I just felt like if I was Frank Ntilikina, you're going into a situation where you were drafted by Phil Jackson and Steve Mills, but they get rid of the guy that drafted you basically 5 days after he drafts you. So then you come to a team, and by January, they're already bringing in a guard to compete with you in Trey Burke, and then they go out and they trade for another point guard. So I think that Frank Ntilikina, his head was probably spinning a little bit, and he's only 19 years old. You're learning a new system, a new culture, adapting, to everything about this country. And I think for him, that had to be pretty tough. So, but I will say this: I thought Trey Burke played well, but I think the ceiling. I think you have to look at the ceiling being a little bit higher than Frank Ntilikina. And I thought some of these moves that they made probably hampered Frank's development a little bit.
Yeah, and here's the interesting thing about with Fizdale and Porzingis. I mean, Porzingis not expected to play at all this upcoming season, yet, Frank, he's eligible for the five-year extension worth up to $157 million. Is he going to get it now?
And that's going to be an interesting one. That is going to be very interesting to see what the Knicks do. I tend to think that they will give it to him, but it's funny that you mentioned that he might not play, and you know how most teams are very secretive when it comes to medical information about any player, much less their best player. And the Knicks are no different. And I just find it kind of amusing that the owner, Jim Dolan, in an interview with a local reporter, he was the one that kind of spilled the beans and said, oh, yeah, he might not play next season. As secretive as these teams are about the most minor of injuries, here was a case where you had the owner coming out and, with a bombshell that Kristaps Porzingis might not play at all in 2018-19.
And again, the Knickerbockers with the lottery number 9. Don't tell me they're going to draft a point guard.
You know who they should draft? The best player that they think is available at number 9. I don't want to hear about position. I don't care about that. I don't care where the guy is from, how many years he went to college, if he didn't go to college. I think too many of these teams, it drives you nuts. You watch the draft lottery, which I really think is it's the loser's convention. And these teams that are so happy to be there, and they're talking about what lucky, they have a lucky charm that they brought with them, and all this other nonsense. Like, I'm watching the Sacramento Kings. They had that video of people in their front office when they moved into the top 3, and they're cheering like they won some big championship. You guys haven't made the playoffs for 12 straight years. That means you've been in the lottery a lot. You're very good at getting into the lottery. You're clearly not that good once you get there. So why are you celebrating? It's the same thing, the Orlando Magic, it's 6 years now that they haven't made the playoffs. And I still bring up the story back in 2008. The draft lottery was in Secaucus, New Jersey. And I'm sitting there, and here come, the car service is pulling up. Out walks Pat Riley. Out walks Larry Bird. Like, how fun. I mean, Pat Riley and Larry Bird hanging out in Secaucus, New Jersey. And you know what? They looked miserable being there, Steve. You want to know why? Because that meant you were a loser. It's not like some great celebration to be at the draft lottery. And their whole thing was, all right, we're going to be in it this year. We're not coming back next year. And I think that's kind of the attitude you have to have. And I think too many of these teams, I think it's the greatest thing that they're in the draft lottery. Look at the Utah Jazz. 13th overall pick of the draft, they got Donovan Mitchell, who will either finish first, most likely second, in Rookie of the Year. So a lot of teams in the top 12 passed on him. Jason Tatum was outstanding. Philadelphia passed on him. The Lakers passed on him. So there will be a good player. I say it all the time. There's going to be a good player available for the Knicks to take. It's just a matter of them knowing which player to take.
Is LeBron James, is he going to be available in Game 6? He didn't seem to be available last night, Frank.
Yeah, and what I didn't like about it was he seemed to go to great lengths to prove to us that he was exhausted and he was thirsty. he seemed to punt on that game a little bit. And maybe he thought early on, you know what, we don't have it. We're playing every other night now. We'll go home, we'll take Game 6, and then I'll like my chances in a Game 7. But I didn't like that performance at all. The game was not well played, really, on both ends. I mean, the Celtics only shot 36%. But LeBron's had some, clearly had some great moments. But I think a couple of things to look at. He played 82 games for the first time in his career. Last night for him was game 98. He's never played more than 100 games in a season. Now, if he gets to a game 7, that would be game number 100. And obviously, if they win, then he'll play the most games he's ever played. And I give him credit for playing in as many games as he did because, he really carried this team. Maybe it's catching up to him. He's logging a lot of miles over his career. He's played more minutes than anybody. And the team just doesn't have that secondary guy that can kind of help him out. I keep saying it. They miss Kyrie Irving more than the Boston Celtics miss Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
LeBron really needs that help. But LeBron's been great. But I do laugh because every time LeBron does something spectacular, we're all sitting back, oh, my God, he's superhuman, Then last night, he's tired. What did he walk from Cleveland to Boston? He didn't get on the plane like everybody else? That was a little odd, that whole scene last night.
And, of course, let's face it, do you think LeBron would rather have Carmelo Anthony or Kyle Korver?
That's a good question. Let me tell you something. I know this might seem like blasphemy, but I think right now Kyle Korver is probably more valuable because he's a knockdown shooter. And you get him coming off screens, catch and shoot, he can knock shots. I was surprised that Carmelo did. I know you're referring to Carmelo responding to that Instagram post. And I mean, Carmelo should be above that. I mean, he's been in the league for a long time. He's had a rough couple of years here. Like, why do that? And it kind of looks like you're going after Kyle Korver a little bit, and the timing of it was unfortunate because I don't know if you had a chance to see that story by Brian Windhorst. It was on ESPN.com, and they did a story last night before the game of the situation with Kyle Korver's family, where his youngest brother, there's four Korver brothers, and the youngest one died suddenly after like a really brief illness back in March, and the family's really like struggling to cope with that. I just felt like not that Carmelo probably was aware of that and he meant it like that, but it just wasn't a good look for Carmelo last night to weigh in on something so trivial like that, where it's just someone's opinion. I mean, why does he care?
Right. And of course, it doesn't seem like he wants to come off the bench next season. And I think he has an option to opt out. And if he does leave Oklahoma City, where's he ending up?
Yeah, well, I think Oklahoma City's probably hoping that he does opt out. I think it's about $27 million. I think Carmelo needs to be more realistic about where he is
in
his career. Even the great Dwayne Wade, who's had a better career than Carmelo, came off the bench in Cleveland. Then he went to Miami, where he is, in my opinion, the most famous professional athlete in South Florida history, and that includes Dan Marino. He's won more championships than Dan Marino did. That's for sure. And he was willing to come off the bench. Manu Ginobili has carved out a Hall of Fame career by mostly coming off the bench. So it happens to players. It's at this stage of his career, I think he'd be better as a backup. And I think Carmelo kind of has to come to grips with that, especially on a team like Oklahoma City, where you were playing with Russell Westbrook and Paul George. I think he would have gotten more scoring opportunities coming off the bench. That one's going to be very interesting to see what happens, because I think what Oklahoma City is going to do, they're basically telling him now, you're coming off the bench. That's kind of as a way to say, if you're staying, you know what you're getting into, and if you want to leave and opt out, be our guest.
All right, most of the games we have seen in both with the Western Conference and the Eastern Conference, for the most part, one-sided. A few of these games have been as close as what we saw the other night with the mouthpiece and the shimmy and the beard with James Harden and Trevor Ariza and Eric Gordon. That was a close game. The operative number in that game with the Warriors and with the Rockets, the operative number 12. The Warriors had a 12-0 lead to start the game. They had a 12-point lead when the fourth quarter started. They only scored 12 points in the fourth quarter. I believe it was the worst shooting percentage quarter of the season, let alone the postseason, and blew that 12-point lead. Does this mean Houston is going to beat the Warriors and end up in the finals, Frank?
Well, you think like I do. I thought the same thing. They started the game with a 12-0 run. And then in the final 12 minutes of the game, all they could score were 12 points. And to me, that fourth quarter was very reminiscent of Game 7 a couple of years ago when they played the Cavaliers and they were struggling like that down the stretch and they were panicking. And I thought what was very interesting was on that second-to-last possession, that was the Klay Thompson play, where Durant, I don't know why Kevin Durant, why he just didn't take it himself. He dribbled to the left side of the court By the time Klay Thompson caught the ball in the corner in front of Houston's bench, which has got to be like a different feeling for a shooter when you know like the opponent is kind of behind you and in front of you, that was a bad play. All five Warrior players on the left side of the court. And then Steve Kerr said that at that point, when he knew the play had broken down and they were in trouble, he was trying to get a timeout. And I think the thing with Steve Kerr, you know, Steve Kerr has got this reputation, calm, cool, and collected. At that point, you have to be a raving lunatic. You got to run onto the court to get the ref's attention to get him to call a timeout. He's not going to call you a technical foul on. And I've seen Doc Rivers do it. I remember Derek Fisher ran to almost center court during his time with the Knicks to get a timeout. So I thought that last like minute, for really the last 20 seconds for the Warriors, was not good. But I would say this too. That's the worst quarter you're ever going to see them play, and they still had a chance to win the game.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe Houston takes them out tonight and, you know, forces a game seven. When I watch the Warriors play, to me, they just have so much talent. Now, it would be a Iguodala situation, whether or not he plays, could be a huge factor. But when you watch them play, it almost seems unfair how much talent they have.
You know, a little comeuppance, a little humility, you would like to think, setting in after that game the other night, and you're right, they lose by 3 points. They still had a chance for the tie with Curry taking the Hail Mary. Earlier in the game, the shimmy and the mouthpiece, and they're flexing their muscles. Do you think possibly some humility might have set in with this team getting a little out of control?
Well, the mouthpiece has been going on with Curry for a long time.
Sure.
Now, I think it's just become a habit. I mean, is it annoying? Is it obnoxious? Absolutely. Individually, if you were to sit down and talk to all the guys on the Warriors, they're very likable guys. But I do believe they're an unlikable team. And I think that happens with all the success that they've had. There is definitely a certain arrogance and the shimmying and all that other stuff. And even Steph Curry, you know, how about, I guess it would have been game three when he cursed, which really was out of character for him, and then he admitted that his mother told him, you better wash your mouth out with soap. So even like Steph Curry, who was like, you know, the adorable little kid with the family and everything like that, you know, he's even changed a little bit. I think it just comes with success. And, you know, in a sports sense, they're becoming like the villains, and sometimes that's not the worst thing. I think there's a lot of people that want to see them lose, but it's like anything. If they're going to lose, you kind of want to see them lose in the finals because you enjoy watching them play so much.
Yeah, well, here's the interesting thing. I mean, I'm rooting for the Beard. I'm rooting for the Houstons because it would be the ultimate in humility setting in, you would like to think, for a team that sometimes takes itself for granted. In that fourth quarter, Frank, when they scored only 12 points, I thought Durant and Curry, too, I thought panic set in. They took some awful shots.
And then I thought at the end, I kind of thought that Durant on that play where he gave the ball up, to me that was like, here, you take it. Now I get it. He did ask for the ball back at some point. Then he was yelling at Klay Thompson after the shot didn't go in. I kind of agree with it. That's why I say, it looked a lot like that fourth quarter against Cleveland 2 years ago when they also fell upon the fourth quarter. Now, the difference is Kevin Durant wasn't there back then. But they've had a wacky season. If you look at their team, you know, Curry played 50 games. I think Klay Thompson was at 73, and Durant was about at 70. Draymond Green missed a bunch of games. So they missed a lot of games this season. I know from talking to people on their staff, defensively, they haven't been that good. But they're such a good offensive team. I still think, for me, it's hard to bet against them, but they have definitely, you know, to your original point, you know, I think the way people look at the Warriors, I think most people look at them as an all-time team, and they have all this talent, but like anything, they are becoming a little unlikable.
What are we, and before I let you go, Frank, and a million thanks for the time you're giving us once again, what are we more likely to see with what remains in both the conference finals? Another technical from Draymond Green or a headbutt from J.R. Smith?
Man, J.R. had some moments last night when he shoved Jason Tatum to the ground. So J.R.'s had, you know, he had the two good games in Cleveland. The problem is with all LeBron's supporting cast, it's like their games don't travel. They don't play as well on the road as they do at home, and that's a big problem. I guess you could say the same thing about Boston because they're only 1-6 on the road. But J.R.'s got to be careful. Draymond Green's got to be careful. We know, hey, JR almost cost the Knicks a playoff series. Draymond Green cost his team a championship for what he did a couple of years ago by picking up that technical foul. So he's got to be a lot smarter.
And the NBA champion is going to be?
I still say the Golden State Warriors. Even though I do think Boston could win tomorrow night and end LeBron's run at home, and which, as you know, could be the last game that LeBron plays in Cleveland as a member of the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Going to Philadelphia, so Ben Simmons can get more than 1 point in a playoff game, or is he going to end up in Southern California and or stay in Cleveland?
Yeah, I think all those are in play. I'm not so sure about Philadelphia. You know, I know that he owns two houses out in L.A. He and his wife have been out there before checking out schools. Mm-hmm. I hope he stays in Cleveland. That's where he's from. And, you know, to me, the Cavs can still do some things during the offseason. They do have that eighth pick. If they maybe they package that with a player, they can get somebody. You know, to me, like, he's Ohio. He is Cleveland. So I hope he stays there. But if I'm betting, I think he's leaving.
All right. Frank, can't thank you enough. Hope to do it again soon.
Hey, Steve, anytime, and glad to hear you back on the air.
Yeah, me too, Frank. Thanks so much for the time.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.